Welcome to episode number 26 of Finding Your Fabulous. In these weird and wonderful times that is 2020, how do you feel about your money? I know I had a bit of a rude awakening when I was forced to really look under the hood of my spending and see just what I was doing with my money. It's not that I was necessarily bad with money, but when I was furloughed for an extended period of time, I wanted to make sure I just had a clear vision and understood where exactly my money was going and how I'd been spending it. And so this episode is dedicated to owning your power in your finances. I speak to Benedicta, who is definitely a woman that I trust when it comes to this subject. And in this episode, we talk about getting financial help, what a healthy relationship with money looks like, and what it means to really be financially free. And it's not what you might think. Grab a pen and paper because there is loads of actionable advice in this episode, which I know you'll want to make note of, and enjoy the episode. I'm here today with Benedicta, who is a finance coach and founder of Beneratio Finances, which is dedicated to helping people manage their business and personal finances. How are you doing, Benedicta?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. It's an honor to be invited. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. I think money is it's a scary topic, but as I'm sure you're going to get into, it's more important than ever. And you know, we are living through a recession, and there's a lot of uncertainty around at the moment. But to start with, in your work as a financial coach, I know you're incredibly experienced in this area. What is most people's relationship with finance like?
So I think in terms of relationship with finance, that depends on background. Depending on, you know, where you grew up, area, class, unfortunately, I don't like to say it, but it does, you know, your experiences as a child. And of course, it's heavily dependent on what your parents' life was like with finance, because ultimately that's what they pass on to you. And that's what you grow up with subconsciously. So if you are someone who grew up around very financially savvy and confident parents, you're going to be likewise. You know, people who know about investing and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, they're obviously, well, for the most part, going to pass that on. And unfortunately, if you're the person that has grown up maybe from a lower social class, or maybe with parents who are maybe manual laborers, people who are not as intelligent in that area, unfortunately, they don't have that much to pass on, unless, of course, you are the kind of person that educates yourself on this topic. But from my experience, you know, even in terms of trying to start educating yourself, you know, an 11-year-old is hardly going to go and educate themselves without a nudge from an adult, you know. So it's not until maybe you're like 18, 19, depending on how you feel, you might then decide, actually, I don't want to be like my parents and I want to do something different. Or, you know, you might not see anything wrong with it and continue. So yeah, from my experience, I'd say people's relationship with finance can always vary depending on their background, unfortunately. But of course, that's not the end of the road. You can always change and make things better.
Yeah, you mentioned there educating yourself on finance, and you mentioned sort of an age of 18, 19. When do you think is the best time to start educating yourself on finance, and how does one go about doing that? What does that look like?
Yeah, so I would say, obviously, as soon as you start getting paid, ideally, you know, if you're a parent already, you can take the step to start, you know, educating your child. If you're not, then ideally, as soon as you get a job, because, you know, you have money and now you need to manage it. So ideally, you want to do things properly, right? So from the moment you have a job, are thinking of getting a job, or even not just having a job, maybe having access to, you know, to money. So like, you know, student loans, you might not be working, but access to student loan, that kind of stuff, you know. From then, you want to know about money and how to make it work. And of course, the basics of money management will always start with budgeting. You know, what are you using the money for, your income, your expenses, making sure it's enough to go around. And then, you know, you want to start developing onto more mature things like, you know, your credit score, also investing, how you can multiply the money, you know, those kind of things. So I'd say that's kind of the step that you can take from the moment you know that you're going to start having a steady flow of income. But even without a steady flow of income, you know, with younger people who maybe they get money just for birthdays or, you know, special occasions, even then you can still apply some financial discipline to that kind of money. For example, you might want to have a formula that says, you know, anytime I get money, I'm going to save half of it. I'm going to spend 25% of it, and I'm going to, I don't know, share or give the other 25% out, you know, to charity or whatever. Some those kind of, you know, formulas, that applies even when you don't have regular income.
Yeah, those are some really good points there. And in regards to actually looking for a coach, so you help people manage their money. When do you think it's time that you should start looking for a coach?
I would say, if you realize that you are having a challenge with your money, and ideally you don't want to be getting to the point that you have a challenge, right? Because prevention is better than cure. I mean, sorry, yeah, prevention is better than cure.
Yeah.
However, you know, most people probably don't realize until there is a problem. And so what would a problem be? Or, you know, a problem would be something like the fact that you're getting paid, you have a full-time job, but you still find that you can't afford certain things. And I'm not talking obviously about luxury lifestyle, you know,
yeah,
affording the basics. You know, you're on a full-time job, you've got decent money coming in, but every month you're having to spend on your credit card. So, you know, you're basically in revolving debt, or you find that maybe you want to buy a house, but for whatever reason, your credit is very bad, so you can't even get, you know, credit. Those are like red flags. And like I say, ideally you don't want to be getting there before you're having to seek advice. But definitely if you're in any of those circumstances, I definitely think you need to be reaching out for help.
Okay. And what is there anything that people should look for when it comes to looking for a coach? Because I know that there's, you know, Instagram is awash with people who kind of claiming they can, you know, help you make money. You know, there's a lot of big claims on Instagram. So
yeah,
what kind of things should people look for when they're looking for someone to give them money advice?
I would say you need to, apart from, okay, so of course there's going to be the expertise and the skills, and is this person even qualified? You know, when this person is saying I'm a financial coach, do they have certificates to back up these claims? And don't get me wrong, certificates are not everything. You know, not everyone is, you know, all about the however many exams. However, first of all, the qualifications do at least point you in the right direction of a professional rather than someone who's just guessing, because obviously they would have gone through a number of classes, schools and whatever. And also they have something to lose. You know, it's like a doctor. A doctor has a license. If he does something wrong, his license is on the line. So you can be rest assured that he's going to try and do what will not take away his license, if you get what I mean. And it's a similar thing with the finance. If you know someone's a qualified financial advisor or a qualified accountant or something like that, you know that that person is backed by a higher institution, if that makes sense. So you know that they're not going to want to do anything that's going to be, you know, against the law. But on the other hand, if you're looking for a financial coach, one thing I think is very important is that you have to trust the person. You need to be able to get along with the person. You should be able to relate with the person. The person doesn't need to be your best friend, but you need to have a kind of rapport, because obviously when you're talking about finances, you're putting your life on the line. You're sharing possibly your bank statements with them, where you live. You know, you're talking about how much you earn. You're talking about how much debt you're in. You don't want someone who you're going to feel judged by, or you're going to feel like, you know, they don't get where you're coming from, you know, for whatever reason that you're in the place that you're at. You need to be comfortable to be able to share all of these different things with them. So I think those are the two main things, the professional aspect, but of course the rapport aspect, someone that you trust and can get along with.
Yeah, and I like what you mentioned there about there is a lot of emotion attached with sharing. Like,
yeah,
money is a really intimate thing. They are numbers, but there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of maybe shame or pride or all kinds of things that are attached to it. So what does a healthy relationship with money look like?
So I would say a healthy money relationship is one where you are in control. And what do I mean by you being in control? You are in control of the money, and you are the one telling it where to go. You are able to say yes and no to certain things. you know, within a certain, you know, limits and confines, as opposed to an unhealthy relationship, which is one whereby your money is controlling you. And what do I mean by that? It's almost literally like running away from you. Why? Because you have to pay for all of these other things that you have no control over. So an example of that would be someone who is constantly paying, and this goes across the board. So whether it's you're constantly paying for debt, because you've got a lot of, you know, loans, credit cards, that kind of thing. And so you're tied to these contracts and, you know, you have to pay whether you like it or not. Or maybe you're living in accommodation that's very expensive, or you've got a very expensive car, or you're having an expensive lifestyle that you actually can't afford. Even that is an unhealthy relationship, because you're having to use your money to fund something that is not really true. Down to if you find yourself having to always give to people that you don't want to give, you know, maybe because of peer pressure and that kind of stuff, or family pressure, tax and all of that kind of stuff. That's an unhealthy side. And a healthy side would look like you being able to say yes and no to purchases as you desire. You being able to say yes and no to certain lifestyle choices as you desire. And of course, within reason, you know, nobody, I'm not sure, even the millionaires of the world, I'm not sure they go on holiday every single, you know, week of the year or every single month. Yeah. Of the year. There has to be that reasonable aspect, you know, with your salary, with what you're earning, are you able to make reasonable decisions about your lifestyle, you know, that are affordable and don't leave you feeling down? And I think actually talking about healthy relationship comes back to the emotion. If when you think about money, so you might have the designer clothes, or you might have, you know, whatever, the lifestyle, quote unquote, the Instagram lifestyle. Yeah. But if emotionally you're feeling drained, I think there's something wrong. If emotionally you're feeling down with your money, when you think about your money, if you think about your statements, then there's definitely something wrong. A healthy lifestyle or a healthy relationship with money would be one where you are actually able to smile at your statement, you know, smile about your money, make jokes and that kind of stuff, and be comfortable talking about it.
Yeah, and you mentioned there the Instagram lifestyle. As a coach, do you notice that people are, instead of letting, you know, living their lives and putting it on social media, they kind of let social media dictate how to live their lives, and then that has an impact on finance? Is that something that you see?
Yeah, most definitely. I think even, you know, even before Instagram, it was, you know, friends who are around you, maybe if you're in class, in uni, or your work friends, your work colleagues, you know, everyone's going to the pub, or everyone's going for drinks, and, you know, everyone's having loads and loads of rounds, and you feel like you can't say no, or they're splitting the bill in a way that you're not sure about, you know. Instagram is just another, it's just an internet version of that. So, you know, it's you seeing other people having certain things and feeling like, oh, I need to have that as well, or I have to do it because everyone else is doing it. If I don't do it, then I won't fit in. As much as it's easy to blame Instagram, it's still down to the person. You know, we all have to have that area of discipline. And I guess that comes back to the previous question about a healthy relationship. When you're in control and you're able to say yes or no, that Instagram lifestyle doesn't faze you. As a financial coach, I can definitely see it. And I definitely have had multiple DMs from multiple people and multiple customers. Of course, everything is confidential. But, you know, there are many people who are, you know, saying and doing one thing on the outside, but within, you know, they are literally crumbling and it's not working out. And I'll use a very famous one. You know, we all hear about celebrities who, oh, this person's worth however many million or billion or whatever, the Simon Cowells and the Kanye Wests, and the next thing you hear that they're in debt, and you're wondering, how on earth did that happen? You know, when they're millionaires or billionaires, it's very easy to fall into that trap, and it's very easy to look good on the outside, which is why I would say to many people, don't be fooled by what you see, because if you are trying to adjust your life and force yourself to live a certain way because of what you're seeing, you don't know the reality of that person's situation behind closed doors.
Yeah, that's so poignant. And it's so easy to get wrapped up and think that what you're seeing on the screen is the real world. But you really don't know what is the state of someone's bank balance behind the cars and the eating out and the flashy holidays. Yeah. Like, that's a really, really important thing to remember. I know I need that reminder sometimes because it's just such a, yeah, and you're right. It did exist before Instagram. It's just a new way that we have to kind of learn to set boundaries.
And yeah. We're talking
about boundaries a lot on this podcast. Do you have any advice for setting boundaries when it comes to money?
I would say, the only boundaries I would say is, again, just making sure that you're in control. At the end of the day, if you're in control and you are the one setting, that's what is the boundary, basically, you being in control. The moment you feel like your money is being taken away from you without you having a say, then something is wrong and there are no boundaries, basically, or the boundary lines are being crossed. You know, I wouldn't want to dictate what rules. I know some people will say, oh, you know, you should save 20% and you should invest the other 20% and you can spend 5% on needs. And, you know, there's all these percentages going around. But the reality of the situation is that, you know, every single person's situation is different. You can't, as somebody on a 50K salary, for example, they might be able to comfortably save 20% of their salary. But somebody else who's just on, you know, I don't know, 19K, 20K with children, you know, you can't force that kind of person to save 20% because it might not be comfortable. You know, they might still have things to pay for compared with a single person on a 50K salary who should be able to easily save, which is why I'm never one for percentages and, you know, rules and that kind of stuff. For me, it's always about your personal circumstances and, you know, you need to look at your numbers. And of course, you can get help from people like myself and many other people out there. You can get help and, you know, have a personalized budget, a personalized plan and set personal boundaries and personal limits for yourself.
That's so key because, again, we compare to other people. We think there's a one size fits all answer, but everyone's situation is so unique. And
it really is.
You can be on a 50K budget, but if you're spending 60K, like, what's the point?
Exactly.
Like, you have to match it to your lifestyle and also what, you know, to a point where you're not denying yourself of things, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I think it can go two ways. So with that in mind about your personal situation, I want to ask you a little bit about your financial journey. And I'd like to ask you, what was the one thing that you wish you knew about money management when you were younger?
I think I would say for me, it's probably, I wish I had been taught more about investing at a younger age. Like, I've always been good with money management anyway, and especially saving. If I'm honest, I can't even say honestly where I got that from. It was just a natural inclination. But I think I probably got to the investing journey a little later than I would have preferred. And so I guess I would have liked a lot more exposure personally to, you know, investing and the world of, you know, all the different ways that you can invest, you know, whether it be, you know, passive investments or active investments, stocks and shares, or, you know, different bonds, mutual funds, all of that kind of stuff. I think it would have been good to be exposed to that. And I say that I was exposed to it, you know, via education. Because as part of my business degree, it was something that I also studied. However, the practical realities of it, doing it on a day-to-day basis, I wish I had that a lot earlier.
Yeah, in a classroom and outside of a classroom are two different things. but would you say, how did you then get to learn about investing in that kind of world? Because you're clearly someone who knows about that now. So what was that journey like not having that education? How did you kind of get your head around it?
So definitely, like we talked about earlier, you know, self-training, self-education, you need to go and look for the information. If you don't know about something, then you need to find out about it, whether that be talking to other people who already know and are experts in that field, or, you know, reading up. Of course, online is a whirlwind and you need to be careful what you're reading, but, you know, verifying your sources as well, talking to people who are exposed to it. If I'm honest, I would say of all the financial topics, maybe investing is probably my least strongest. Of course, when I say that, that's because, you know, I'm comparing it to my expert knowledge in, you know, accounting, for example, which is what I do all day, every day. But I know that my investing knowledge is still definitely way more better than, you know, many other people out there. But, you know, if I was to put an order, I would say, you know, accounting is definitely going to be higher. You know, the budgeting and financial management, planning, saving, getting rid of debt, those are like my my main bits. And like I say, for me, investing was like the last on the list. And to be fair, if I'm honest, it's still an area that I'm like, oh, there's so much more out there. But what I do is I stick to what I do know. Like, at the end of the day, you don't have to know everything, but what you do know, you need to know it very well. And so, you know, I'm not necessarily one for investing in stocks and trading on the stock market and that kind of stuff. But I know a lot about passive investments, investments that are low risk, investments that will get you your return over time. It's not about short schemes, Ponzi schemes and that kind of stuff. And that's what I sell, and that's what I'm confident about, and that's what I share with my customers. So that's what I do for me in terms of investing.
Yeah, and I guess it's always a learning process, right? There's always going to be new things to learn. So I guess it's about having that approach and always just being open and self-educating, like you said. So what does it mean to be financially free?
For me, financial freedom, contrary to what many people think, which is, you know, having £1,000,001 in your bank account. For me, financial freedom is just about not having an obligation to pay for things without your permission, without your consent. And so let me just make that practical. And this comes back to the control point. For me, if I am on a salary, it doesn't matter what salary. In fact, even if I don't have a salary, but on a monthly basis, I can continue to live in my house. I can continue to eat. I can continue to sleep, wake up, watch TV, do whatever, go on holiday with my own money and not have to seek permission, i.e. from a bank, from a credit card or a friend or whatever, I am financially free. So it's more about just not having debt obligations for me. That's what financial freedom is about. Because what it means is, even if I didn't earn any money, can I still continue to live? That's the question I ask. If you don't earn a salary in this particular month, would you be able to survive? If your answer is no, you are not financially free. So although you might have someone who has £1,000,000 salary or whatever it is, but if they are constant, they have to pay every single month for their rent or their mortgage or whatever it is, they have to pay every single month for their car, i.e. if they don't pay for their car, it's going to be taken away. If they don't pay for their phone bill, it's going to be taken away. Anything that is a financial obligation that forces you to have to pay someone else every single month, unless your lifestyle is going to be, changed, that's not financial freedom.
I love that definition.
It's a very
I really
one.
Like that definition. No, because I think on the flip side, there are people who are probably listening to that and realizing, oh, I am financially free. Like, actually, just because I'm not making a 7-8-figure salary, like, doesn't mean that I'm not, you know, doing well. Like, it is about being able to live within your means and live in a lifestyle that is comfortable. So I really do like that definition. Now, we're recording this in early mid-November 2020, and the UK is currently under the second lockdown of the year. And obviously, you know, this year has been crazy uncertain in terms of finances. There's been a lot of uncertainty at people's jobs, furlough, recession, just general economic uncertainty. So I want to know, what are some actionable things people can do? Maybe, you know, while we've got this extra time at home, we're not going anywhere. What can people do to maintain their money better and to, you know, set themselves up for financial freedom, as you say?
Yeah. So I would say, number one, I'll start with some very basic but practical tips, and then I'll work my way up. I would say, number one, getting rid of subscriptions and expenses that you are not incurring. I know this sounds so basic, but the amount of people that will continue to pay for services, you know, recession or no recession, lockdown or no lockdown, how many of us have paid, you know, for gym membership and not even gone to the gym? It's those kind of things. And in this time, it is so important to do a review on those kind of things that you are paying for monthly that you are not using, you know, and where maybe, for example, things need to be paused just because of the lockdown, you know, make sure that you're taking advantage of these things. As far as I'm aware, there is no organization out there who is not, you know, pausing or, you know, listening to their customers in regard to, you know, the financial effects of COVID. But the issue is that many people just do not ask. Many people just don't go out and make the step. So they just leave it and that money is gone. And that's what it is.
Yeah, these subscription companies are so sneaky. Like with Amazon, they don't tell you, you sign up for the free trial and then you forget and then they take the money from your account. You're like, oh,
and half of the time when they do, they know what they're doing because they know people forget, and they know that even sometimes when people remember, they just can't be bothered. And so many, many companies know that I will just continue to get paid, and actually they do the free trial in the hope that you will forget. And many of us play into their arms. So yeah, the other thing I would say is, you know, obviously rejigging of your finances, it may or may not apply to you depending. So for example, someone like myself, I literally have not been into an office building since March. So, you know, either way, it wasn't going to affect me. But for some people who were going, who maybe started going back out to work again, obviously now you're in at home, things like your petrol money needs to be re-diverted. So, you know, taking away your expenses from places that you are no longer using it, i.e. unused subscriptions or petrol or transport or travel costs that, you know, you're not incurring anymore, and re-diverting it to places that you are incurring more money. You know, in the UK, November is cold. The heating starts going on. You know, you're probably going to eat more because you're at home. You know, those kind of things, re-diverting or reallocating your funds is so important in this time in a lockdown. The next thing would be, I would say, again, very obvious one, but watching out for your expenses. When we're at home, it's so easy. Deliveroo, Just Eat, Uber Eats, all day, every day. You know, those things, my brother, he does Uber Eats just as a part-time kind of thing, in addition to his other work. And he was just saying, he says to me that he actually makes a lot of his money in the morning. And I'm like, in the morning? I thought people did, you know, delivery in the
evening. Takeaway, yeah.
He said, yeah, McDonald's breakfast. I said, what?
Of course.
I couldn't believe it. For me, in my head, you know, it's just not a thing, like, to get takeaway in the morning. And he was like, yeah, he does a lot of McDonald's breakfast. So even by lunchtime, he makes a lot of money. So, you know, things like that, just watch out for it. I know we're at home. I know we're sad. I know we want to go outside, you know, but let's try not to comfort eat, especially if it's causing a financial dent in our pockets.
There are ways. I think it's so important to have ways to self-soothe that aren't attached to money, however that is for you. Could be anything, but
that is it. You know, even if it means just, you know, and it, of course, I'm not by any means saying you should never get a takeaway or you should never, you know, it's not that kind of game. But what it is about the balance. And I love what you just said there. You know, you can self-soothe without having to, you know, affect yourself financially, whether that literally be putting on an old comedy video or something that makes you laugh, you know, or buying some £1 popcorn, you know, £1 popcorn from Tesco,
little luxuries,
or Asda or something, and, you know, watching a movie with that. It doesn't have to be the £10 popcorn in the cinema, you know, just those kind of things, finding cheaper alternatives. And then I would say, you know, on a more serious note, if you are in a position where maybe you're receiving reduced income again, I know many people are on furlough. Thankfully, 80% is not as bad as 50%, you know, is also not as bad. 50% is also not as bad as zero. You know, there are the reality, some people have lost their job. Some people are on such a reduced income that they can no longer afford to, you know, the basics. This is a time to seek help, get advice, whether that be, you know, on the gov.uk website if you're in the UK, or it be from an accountant or a specialist or whatever, financial advisor who can tell you what's out there. There are many grants, there are many schemes available. Make sure that you plug in to these and don't suffer in silence. You know, many people talk about, you know, not wanting to be on benefits. You know, there's a bit of a pride and shame thing going on there with the benefits scheme. But honestly, when you compare it to many other countries where people are literally dying for basic necessities and their government is not willing to provide anything, trust me, you should, and you probably will be grateful when you realize what, you know, the UK government does for its citizens and any other country, you know, wherever people are listening from. If you're lucky and blessed enough to be in an economy where your government is willing to give you, you know, some benefits or whatever in the meantime, whilst, you know, things get better, please do not feel ashamed. Do not be afraid. Do not think about other people. You know, go for it and make sure that you survive the time, basically.
Yes, love that. Is there any other ways that we can kind of look into our finances? Any things that we should be looking for aside from, you know, subscriptions and things like that? Anything else that we can do?
I think those are the main ones. If you are blessed enough to have extra cash because of the season, then of course, looking into investments, we all know that the interest rates are really, really low. So having your money sit in a bank account is not doing you any benefit. You're probably losing, because when you compare what you're getting on interest and you take away inflation, that money is not going to buy you as much. So I would say this is a time to actually learn. We talked about learning earlier, you know, learn about the new, you know, learn about new and reliable schemes of investing or ways of multiplying your money so that it can stretch. Because I know there are some people who are actually cashing in the lockdown. So, you know, definitely that's the other side of the coin. We've talked about the negative side, but the positive side, you know, make your money work for you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go do some research into investing after this, I think. So to finish off, Benedicta, how would you like my listeners to find their power this week?
To find their power, did you say?
Yeah, to own their power this week.
I would say own your power by getting bold and confident with your numbers. And that would mean, you know, knowing exactly every penny that's coming in and every penny that's going out, and having your numbers, your budget, your finance spreadsheet, whatever it is you're using, your app, you know, set up in a way that makes you proud, that you would confidently want to go out there and share with, even if it's just your brother or your sister or your mum or your dad, you know, that this is what you've done with your finances. You know, they should have a go at doing it too. Do something that will make, you know, you confident and bold enough to talk about your personal finances with someone else.
Love that. Well, I'm going to go work on my spreadsheet now, which, as you know, is color coded. Thank you so much, Benedicta. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for having me. And yeah, I'll look forward to other sessions in the future.
Yeah. Oh, before you go, actually, how can people find you on Instagram, website, everything?
So you can find me at Benny Ray Show Finances on Instagram. That's B-E-N-I. And then Ratio, R-A-T-I-O, Benny Ratio, and then Finances. So that's Benny Ratio Finances on Instagram, on Twitter. You can also find me at BennyRatioFinances.com, www.BennyRatioFinances.com. You can book a free session. You can see some of the services that I provide on the website. And of course, you can email me as well, drop me a DM, all of those different communication methods. I am available for you. Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Finding Your Fabulous, and I want to thank you for listening. If you're still here, that must mean you're pretty into what I'm doing. So I want to ask you to take 1 minute of your day to do one little thing that would really make my day and help me grow Finding Your Fabulous. Share this episode to your Instagram story so all your friends know what exceptional taste you have in podcasts, and tag me at Finding Your Fabulous or at The Sinead Khan, or maybe both if you're feeling generous. Love you lots. Stay golden, stay in your power, and stay fabulous.